Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, do I love my job. Love my job. That's because I get to sit here and talk on the radio with you, react to college basketball games. Did that just get punched up right now? React to college basketball games like Indiana falling to Ohio State, what that means for the Buckeyes, what that means for the Hoosiers. Also reacting to some of the other stuff that's happening in college hoops. We'll get you ready for Selection Sunday. Don't worry. I am not taking time off. I got a jet plane tonight, fly to Chicago, do the Big Ten tournament on radio, but I'll be with you for the duration, not just today, but into the weekend and to the next week as well. So help you set your brackets, hopefully help you win a couple of your brackets as well. But let's react. There's, I think, two incredibly big stories today outside of that of college hoops. One revolves around Le'Veon Bell, who forgot the key element to gambling. We'll get to that later on this hour. John Middlecoff will join us upcoming next. He is a former NFL scout, part of the Three and Out podcast. But I want to start with a story from Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report. The subject of moving LeBron James, however, was contemplated by the Lakers, a team source said. Week before, Jeff Van Gundy aired it. When rumors engulfed the team in the February trade deadline that it was willing to trade anyone other than James to acquire all-star forward Anthony Davis from the New Orleans Pelicans. James's agent, Rich Paul, was widely accused of spreading these rumors because Davis is one of his clients. Paul denied to Bleacher Report that he leaked the Lakers' interest in Davis, but Buss suspected otherwise and was furious. The idea of terminating the franchise's relationship with Paul by moving James at least crossed Buss's mind. The team source says, and Paul was made aware of it. That prompted Paul to reach out to Buss to clear the air, and whatever ill will existed supposedly dissipated. At the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference a few weeks later, Buss blamed the media for making the rumors public. What happened with Anthony Davis, what happened with the rumors, what happened with, and I said this at the time, it's very, very important. It doesn't mean that LeBron James himself leaked any of this info. Does not. But here are the rumors and the way in which they came out. At first, it was Chris Broussard, who co-hosts The Odd Couple. That's a show that you can hear at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific every time. Of course, Chris has covered the NBA for years. First rumor to come out was LeBron could be playing if it was the playoffs. He missed 10 more games after that rumor came out. Chris is incredibly connected, and he's not getting that from anyone other than somebody in LeBron James's camp. Right? Then there was Jackie McMullen, who reported that LeBron James would prefer a different head coach. That's rumor two. Then there was the big rumors about potentially trading the entire team for Anthony Davis. What happened at the time was a coup d'etat. Coup d'etat. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with a coup d'etat. It's usually reserved for, you know, it's like a military. The definition is that it's like a coup or an overthrow or a takeover, a regime change. It's a French term, a sudden, and it's considered a violent, illegal seizure of power by government or a notable or successful stroke. No, that's not what it's a seizure of power, usually by government. But in this particular case, it was LeBron James. It was Rich Paul. It was a little bit like, wasn't it Independence Day, right? Where the aliens would come in and they were going to use up all the resources from the planet. Was that the movie I'm remembering? Point is this. LeBron James and Rich Paul had a couple of guys on the team that were Rich Paul clients. And they wanted a Rich Paul client as head coach, and they wanted to get the other star to be a Rich Paul client. And now all of a sudden, when Rich Paul has several clients on the team, they take over the team. That's what they do. We're rolling into L.A., and we're going to own L.A. When we mean own, we mean we're going to own the L.A. Lakers. They were not subtle at all. And you know what Jeannie Buss said? I can't repeat it on radio. That's essentially what she said. Now, it'll be interesting to see if this is all huff and bluster, because the next hire is head coach and the potential move for Anthony Davis, that will determine whether or not they still get their coup. They still get their power. Because she can act tough and say, hey, I thought about moving LeBron James. Like, all right, sure you did. That's the woman saying, I was going to leave him. But, you know, we had kids to think about and a mortgage. And it, like, look, if you're going to leave, walk out the door and go. File papers, move out, get your own place. Now, I know there's also difficult logistics to trading him. Like, potentially, where could you move him? The Clippers, maybe, so he doesn't have to move to L.A. But even then, good luck getting any sort of return on the dollar. The best thing she can do is not hire a Rich Paul client as your next head coach and not trade for a Rich Paul client in the offseason. If you do that, you probably maintain control, command and control of your basketball operation. But, and this is a large Kardashian-size but, just because you fought off one coup does not mean you can fight off the eventual overthrow of your government. Let history be your guide. This is what LeBron James does. This is from Stephen A. Smith back in 2018. According to a couple owners I've spoken to and executives I've spoken to, Dan Gilbert, this is from Stephen A. Smith. Do I have to say it in Stephen A. Smith's voice? Dan Gilbert is known for not being particularly fond of LeBron James. Sorry, that was my best impression. I don't do a great Stephen A. Smith. He doesn't mind the fact that LeBron James is leaving at all. As a matter of fact, I had one executive tell me, excuse me, I can't wait till he leaves because I'll get my team back. This is something that Dan Gilbert actually echoed. This is the exact quote from my sources that said Dan Gilbert said that. Dan Gilbert said, hey, I finally got my team back. Remember, there was Phil Jackson saying, hey, he and his posse, they come in, they think they run the place. They want to be late for the plane. They want to divert the plane. They don't want to be on the plane. That's how they roll. He tried to do it to Pat Riley. He tried to do the key. He walked into Pat Riley's office and said, you ever think about coaching again? Pat Riley said, no, hasn't crossed my mind. Go play basketball. So all of this drama is why Kyrie wants no part of playing with LeBron. All of this drama is why the Cavs, in truth, though they won't be successful anytime in the near future, you own a franchise, like, you want to run your own, you want to have power over your own franchise. That's what you want. And they don't currently have it in L.A. The power struggle is real. You know, did there? Power struggle is real. It is absolutely real and fascinating to watch. And what a complete disaster in terms of PR for LeBron. It was so bad. It was so embarrassing. That Jeannie Buss is like, no, this is my dad's franchise. We bought it off Jack Ken Cook, and we brought Showtime to L.A. And sure, we had some family infighting, and I didn't think Jim was doing the right thing, so I took over and I hired a couple of guys. And we moved mountains to bring you in, and all of a sudden you think you run the place? Mm-mm. Now, we'll see. By the way, this is Bob McNair saying, I think he said the inmates don't run the prison, but the inmates don't run the asylum. Whatever. It's all the same. It's a saying. It's an expression. It has nothing to do with calling a basketball player, a football player, an inmate. It's a widely used expression, almost cliche. And the point is, players play, owners own. And we know LeBron wants to own a team. We just didn't know the Lakers were the team. And the Lakers, as Jeannie Buss has said, not for sale. Not for sale. What a fascinating story. What a fascinating story. And look, there's just a reality to it as well. Like, you can be super mad and go, we're going to trade LeBron, but like, LeBron isn't going to show up if you trade him to anywhere other than maybe the Clippers or maybe New York. But does he want to work for Jim Dolan? How does that exactly work? Where else would he be able to play? That's the amazing thing about the whole LeBron thing is they're stuck with him, but he's kind of stuck with them. And they got to work it out. But Rick Bucher, who we've had on this show, I believe his sources are beyond repute, saying that a couple weeks before Jeff Van Gundy said it, I know Colin said it, hey, they should think about all options trading LeBron James. The problem is the reality to it is you just can't, right? Like, he's just not going to show. You can't trade him to Oklahoma City, Utah, Minnesota, Denver, Portland, blah, 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 blah. Like, you just go through the list of teams. And the only possible destinations are the Knicks and the Clippers, you know, maybe the Celtics. But even that, do those teams, I think the Knicks would want him, but does he want to play for there? Does he want to, will he be willing to move? Which I would guess his wife would say no, but maybe he does.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The devil is always in the details. You guys ever heard that expression? The devil's in the details. Here are the details to Le'Veon Bell's full guarantee at signing. The numbers are in. Year one, with the Jets, he's going to get $14.5 million. Through year two, $26 million. Through year three, $39.5 million. In other words, in addition to not making any money last year, not a penny, in addition to not making any money, he's going to make less money with this current contract than the last one that was offered to him in Pittsburgh. Substantially less. $5 million first year. Okay, $5 million. $7 million by the time the second year is done. And though he makes a little bit more to get it close by the third year, he'll get closer and it'll be about $5.5 million. Now, this is important for a myriad of reasons. First, obviously, it came up short of his expectations to reset the market. Secondly, it showed that he didn't necessarily bet on himself. He just thought his value would be higher than what Pittsburgh was willing to offer, right? It's the whole idea of leverage. Like, if you don't like our deal, shop it, find a better one. He has not. He could have gone anywhere in the league this year. And third, and maybe this is probably the least discussed part of it, I've told you guys that lottery winners, they tell you all the time, the more money you make up front, the better. Don't get a payout over 20 years. Get all the money up front. And so the idea, not only is Le'Veon Bell making less money in totality, he makes up some of that money in the third year and gets him closer, but making the money earlier actually makes it even more valuable. My college coach is a man named Eddie Sutton, and I'm hoping that in 3 weekends, when they announce the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame class of 2019, he finally gets in. I think this is his fifth time being a finalist. Like, enough already. Put the guy in the Final Four. Put the guy in the Hall of Fame. So 2 years in a row, my junior and my senior year, right around Christmas break, we played UNLV at Thomas and Mack. That's their arena. And I'll never forget this. We got off the plane, and when we got off the plane in Vegas, you got an envelope of money. You get your per diem. And so I remember playing on like a Wednesday, and my first year we played Creighton and we lost, and we were all in a bad mood on like a Sunday. We fly out. We don't play until Tuesday or to Wednesday. And you get off the plane, and the manager is meeting you, and he gives you a wad of money. And it sounds like a big thing, but like $26 a day, plus you've made whatever $26 you got from your game at Creighton. So, you know, you get out the plane, you get like $150, $200 in cash for all the time that you're going to spend in Vegas on, you know, and the road trip. And he brought us all in and he said, fellas, you guys were of age. You want to go gamble, you're not allowed to gamble on sports. You want to put some money on the blackjack table, on the craps table, go ahead. But I want you to know something, fellas. See all those buildings? They don't build them because the house loses. See, the lesson that Le'Veon Bell learned was not one in business. Right? He still probably doesn't understand because a lot of guys can't come to the idea. Like, he's still looking at bottom line numbers when being paid up front, being paid early is actually way more beneficial. You put that money away. And for example, he's making $5 million less. Like, if he got the money you make in the first year, you put that all away, and then you can live off of the interest of that money and keep money makes money, right? The main lesson that Le'Veon Bell learned is the lesson that a lot of these players actually already know. They're not dummies. See, people on TV, people on radio, former players, yeah, man, reset the market. Stick it to the teams. Yeah, man. Hey, dude, this isn't about business. I mean, some of it is about business, right? You're always one hit away from your career being over. Why should I pay you 3 years and guaranteed when some of the great players all of a sudden take one hit and they're done and I still have to pay you that contract? And oh, yeah, by the way, it still counts against the salary cap if you're on the books, even if you're injured, like Alex Smith. This is a lesson in Vegas, a lesson in gambling. And here's the lesson. House always wins. Right? Like, I don't know if you know this, but in blackjack, every time you take a card, every time you take a card, your chances of winning decrease. The odds for blackjack are actually better odds than many other, I think, all other games. I think Baccarat actually is the best odds. I don't even know how to play Baccarat. I barely know how to pronounce Baccarat, but I believe that Baccarat is actually the best odds. Blackjack is the second best odds unless you take a card. Every time you take a card, your odds decrease, right? And that's why I like the payout for roulette is so much more because you have very, very slight odds. But when you get off the plane in Vegas on that Southwest flight and you're like, honey, I'm home. You can look at it Eddie Sutton's way. They don't build those buildings because the house is losing money. Or just remember this expression that Le'Veon Bell should learn. House always wins. You might think you're going to stick it to the man and sit out. All you've done is cost yourself money. Even if he made up the money that he lost, which he did not, even if somehow he got paid $14 million more than the $45 million he was offered by the Pittsburgh Steelers going back to last year, that still actually wouldn't be as much money because there's a year where he didn't make a penny and all of that money could be making more money. But that's more business. This is just simple gambling. He gambled on himself or he gambled on the system and he forgot the most important thing to know in gambling is the house always wins.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
John Middlecoff joins the show. He's got his own podcast called Three and Out. It's outstanding, part of the Herd Podcast Network. Let's start with Le'Veon Bell. What does this do? You know, when Antonio Brown gets a new deal, people say like, oh, see, just wide receivers, guys can control the market where they go. And Le'Veon Bell gets substantially less than he was offered by Pittsburgh. What does this do for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it changes much, Doug. I mean, are you telling me that players, he's the first guy to sit out the franchise tag because no one sits out the franchise tag at so much money. And like you were just talking about, he lost. Like, he didn't win this. Think about all the free agents, Trent Brown, C.J. Mosley, and all the guys that signed. Even Earl Thomas, who was holding out, but ended up playing. He got paid last year. All the free agents played and got paid and then got a contract when, you know, right now. So what, Le'Veon, he could have worked something around with the Steelers, you know, just less wear and tear. They had James Conner, who clearly they liked a lot. This notion that he was going to get 400-plus carries, you know, they could have worked something out, I truly believe. And who passes up $14.5 million? You know, unless he has a career-ending injury, how many players have a career-ending injury every year in football? Like one? You know, I mean, even if he would have broke his leg or something, Earl Thomas broke his leg and got $30 million. So Le'Veon Bell was going to get money unless something substantial happened to him. That's the risk anyone in sports takes.
Yeah.
It was a risk all these free agents take.
Alex Smith this year, probably career ending. Ryan Shazier last year. But yes, and that's why they won't get long-term guaranteed deals. They just don't make financial sense for the teams, even if they make sense for the, like, we're just in denial about the violence of the National Football League. And, you know,
it's just the sport of football, right, Doug? I mean, just the nature of people are getting hurt. You can't give basketball type contracts to football players.
No, or baseball contract. Like, it's a completely different sport. Like, why do people think that's a good, just because they're bad contracts in baseball and basketball doesn't mean there has to be bad contracts in football.
Think about this. Patrick Mahomes, I mean, just had one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. And, you know, he wasn't a rookie, but he basically was.
Yep.
Would you feel comfortable right now giving him like a 10-year, $200 million contract?
No.
I mean, you'd probably do it.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd feel great about it, because what if something like the Alex Smith thing happens to him in 2 years? You'd be screwed.
Correct. Absolutely screwed. John Middlecoff joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Speaking of the Alex Smith thing, I was under the impression they were going to go after Rosen. Instead, you know, they go and help kind of Denver out. Was it because the asking price for Rosen was too high?
Well, I'm a little confused with the Rosen situation, because OTAs, these players are going to report in a couple weeks. So if Arizona, and everyone still thinks Kyler Murray is going to be their guy, are they trying to hold out till like the last second during the draft? Well, then he's going to be working out with the team. If you know you're going to trade him, to me, that's a little bit of bad faith. Like, just get rid of him now. You have the number one overall pick. So maybe they truly were turning some of these teams down, because I can't envision teams like the Redskins would have rather had Rosen than Case Keenum, or, you know, the Dolphins would rather have Rosen than Teddy Bridgewater. But maybe they're just holding out to the last second, you know, to try to get a bigger package. But the thing I keep coming back to, again, are they going to let Rosen work out and practice at the facility and go through the first phase of the OTAs with the team and then just deal them when it's going to be clear if they do that? They knew they were going to do that all along. Seems a little messed up. I mean, I get it's a business and it's cutthroat, but that to me, I mean, are they really about to do it? It kind of feels like it, because I thought what you would assume Rosen would have been traded right when free agency started, and it doesn't really feel like he's going to get traded right
away. Well, that does bring us to where I think he's going. The Giants just got another first-round pick. And they got a third round pick as well. I don't know what the value of Rosen is, but isn't that the now likely destination?
You'd think, but I would say the Dolphins don't have a quarterback. If they end up cutting Tannehill, or have they? I don't think they already have.
Yeah, I think they cut they cut Tannehill yesterday. I think. I know Bortles was cut today, so I don't know. Bortles and Tannehill are different guys, but seem like the same guy. I don't know why.
Yeah. So the Dolphins are going to need one. I still think you could justify, if you're the Redskins, giving up a second-round pick or something for Josh Rosen. Obviously, the Giants, I mean, are they going to really roll it back with Eli, especially now that they trade Odell Beckham? I think that there is going to be a market on draft day, and maybe that's what Arizona's thinking, but I just keep going back to, it's going to be a bad look with Josh Rosen having 3 weeks in the facility in Cardinals stuff, when it's just going to feel like they knew all along what they were doing.
They have not released Tannehill yet. Let me make sure I clarify that. John Middlecoff joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Let me ask you about the Odell Beckham Jr. trade. Do you like it from the Giants' perspective?
I thought it was moronic. First off, why last year, when he was going into his fifth-year option, would you extend him and pay him when you already had reservations?
I don't understand that part. And listen, John, at the time, did you question it? Because I sure as heck did.
Question the contract or question them keeping him?
Question the contract. I didn't understand. He had 3 months of good behavior after being in the hotel room with what looked like cocaine, and they were ready to get rid of him, and all of a sudden he became great teammate guy, and they rewarded him with a huge contract. I didn't understand that at the time.
Yeah, I just didn't. It was clear that they were not on board with him. You know, they just were never really sold. And why couldn't they have done what kind of the Raiders did with Khalil Mack even before, you know, last year at this time with him and got more? And then to pay him, and then you just learn even more of what you already knew. And then to trade him for that? I think that is one of the worst packages. You know, Antonio Brown screwed up the market so much that teams weren't offering anything. To me, Odell Beckham, I talked to some teams, Doug, in the NFC that said they had better offers than that. That the Giants clearly wanted him out of the NFC, which to me, if you're going to trade him, I get not trading him to Dallas or Philly, but why does it matter if you trade him to San Francisco or you trade him to LA or whoever? If they have a sweet offer, just take the offer. You know, if you're going to trade him, trade him. And to me, to take you got back pick 17, and it's not a good third rounder because it's New England's third rounder. So it's at the end of the third round. To me, that pick means nothing. And Peppers is, you know, whatever. I mean, he's a starter. But to me, you got to get pick 17 is the best thing they got back for Odell Beckham. That's crazy. And I'm an Odell Beckham guy. I think he's really talented. And his money is not that crazy if he's just on the field.
Okay, so there is the part that he's always hurt. There's also something else there. Like, to me, you know, look, the Lil Wayne interview was a really bad look. And then you factor in he bails on an onside kick when they're about to beat the Bears. And then he doesn't play at the end of the season when he was all gung-ho about them trying to get to 500 at the end of the year. Is that what it is? Like, what? There's got to be a lot more. That's what we know about. There's got to be a lot more we don't know about for them to take that sort of cap hit after paying him all that money and see him play somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I also think the general manager just hates that type player, which, again, just harkens back to why did you pay him. I also think that from the Brown side, even if there is more and they know about more, you go, well, we'll bring him in as best friend, and Jarvis is a hard worker and pretty easy to get along with, and Baker, you know, is kind of a galvanizing personality. He's played with a lot of stars at Oklahoma. That he'll just fit right in, and it's either shape in or shape out. Now, the hard part is Freddie Kitchens has been a coordinator for half a year, let alone he's never been a head coach. That's a lot to ask. It'd be one thing if, you know, it was John Dorsey and Andy Reid, John Dorsey and Pete Carroll. You'd be like, okay, they'll know what to do with these guys. First-time head coach in that environment with the pressure in that city, it's like it's in one trade in one offseason, Cleveland's, oh, whatever, LeBron's gone now, the Browns are back. They are on paper, but are they going to be in reality? There is, to me, the most amount of pressure on the coach.
Help me out. Do you like the new plan? Because the Raiders apparently had a plan, and they're like, oh, we can get Antonio Brown? Forget that plan. Let's go to a new plan.
I remember we talked about it last year, and I think we disagree with the Mac thing. But if you were on the side of Mac, the Mac trade was good big picture because you're starting over. I was like, oh, if you are going to blow it up, rebuild, start it from scratch. Well, then they didn't really start from scratch because they got Antonio Brown. And to me, it's not about what they paid for Antonio Brown was nothing. But Antonio Brown, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a top five organization, not in football, in sports. And they couldn't get rid of him fast enough. And really, the last couple years have been weird. And this guy is going to come to Oakland. Where Gruden, you know, to me, Carr's not going to be his problem. It might be on the field. Derek's not as good as Ben. But Gruden is hard on guys, and he says things after games. You know, he'll point the finger, and it's easy for everyone to be smiling at all these press conferences all over the NFL right now. After a couple bad losses, and you get three targets in a game, and your coach said he didn't run the wrong right route, that's where I see, you know, AB. Because right now on social media, he's smiling, he's hugging Derek, he looks like he's having the time of his life. But we know when he doesn't get 15 targets in a game, and the Raiders get rolled by the Chiefs, all the cameras are going right to 84's locker. You're crazy if you don't, right?
Yep, absolutely. That's John Middlecoff. Download the 3 and Out podcast. Follow him on Facebook as well. You get outstanding content. Middlecoff, thanks for joining us, dude.
See you, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Chris Haynes, the senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris B. Haynes. Check out the Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. Chris, Zion Williamson has decided to come back and play. You talked to dudes in the NBA, and we had Mason Plumlee on yesterday, and Mason Plumlee said, hey, Kevin Garnett would always come up to him and ask him, what's it like, man? I wish I played in the NCAA tournament. What's the general feeling on Zion coming back and playing from NBA people?
Now, I think most people, you know, I spoke to a bunch of players about this situation. Now, most people feel like if he's healthy, you know, go out there and play. It wasn't as bizarre as it looked with him coming out of his shoe. It didn't end up being a severe injury. And so, you know, most were of the mindset that if he could come back completely healthy and if there wasn't a mental concern in him returning, then he should go back out there and get out there.
So, you know, what was interesting is he played in those, tore his shoes in those PGs, and like Paul George has to like answer questions like, hey, dude, I didn't make the shoe. It's just the shoe designed for my, yeah, but it was a weird deal.
Yeah. He has to. He has to answer that. It's his shoe. This is the most high profile player in college basketball. So, he's going to get those questions and, fair or unfair, you know, that's just what it is. But, it was just a fluke situation. I've never really seen that happen before. And so, glad that he's okay. But, most people aren't shocked that he's coming back, you know, after we got the hearing on how serious the injury was in the first place.
You've been doing this a while. Everybody, I know Rick Bucher. I think he's going to join us tomorrow, actually, on the show. Bucher writes for Bleacher Report. And his latest story is that Jeannie Buss actually threatened to trade LeBron because of all the leaks and the way in which LeBron, his camp, and Rich Paul was handling things. What are you hearing is the state of the relationship between Rich Paul and Jeannie Buss?
Yeah, I haven't heard that at all. I haven't heard that scenario play out myself. So I'm not trying to dismiss any of my colleagues' work or anything like that. I just haven't heard anything like that. I've actually, they're actually cordial. They have a relationship where they can talk and communicate. That was the first I heard about when I saw that report get out.
How do the Lakers fix this? I guess like everybody thinks, well, okay, you trade for Anthony Davis, but again, that's another Rich Paul guy, and then maybe you get one of their guys to be the head coach. Like that actually secedes power as well. Like what becomes the Lakers, whatever their plan B, C, D actually is?
Well, if you look at it, if you look at all, you know, I said it before, but if you look at all the top free agents out there that's on the market, that's Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, who else is out? Oh, Kawhi Leonard. And if you think about all the other teams that they're linked to, none of those players are really directly linked to the Lakers. You know, you talk about Kevin Durant, he's either Golden State or going to New York. You talk about Kyrie Irving, Boston or going to New York. Talk about Kawhi Leonard staying in Toronto or going to the Clippers. Talk about Jimmy Butler. You know, there's more teams with him, but nothing that's directly leading to the Lakers. Then you start getting into kind of like second tier free agents. You know, Kimball Walker, Chris Middleton. You know, maybe the Lakers have a fighting chance of luring Middleton away from Milwaukee. That's a shooter, somebody who would play, you know, perfectly alongside LeBron James. But does that do it? Is that enough? So that's why, you know, I only say that to say that I think they have to get AD somehow, some way. They have to get AD. I think that's going to be the true superstar, that the Lakers have a realistic chance of getting. And, you know, it could change those other free agents, but I just think they have to land AD and then work from there.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Chris Haynes, of course, has his posted up podcast. It's a good one, Yahoo Sports. He joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's get to the Warriors, a team you know very, very well. They go into Houston, get a win last night, and do so without Kevin Durant. And DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, I think it's inarguable. That was his best game since returning from injury. Fair?
Yeah, that game and his first game back was impressive as well.
So what's the state of the Warriors? Because you go back even within this, even within the last week, you had Steve Kerr get caught on camera saying he was tired of Draymond's you know what. Like what's the actual state of that team?
So the state with them, and I hate to minimize everything that's going on. You know, there's some drama, there's some little turmoil, there's some little issues going on, but the Golden State Warriors are just too talented to allow that to stop them, man. Like I've said this. If they go into the postseason, I think they have to the conference. Yeah, I really do. Look, they showed you how great they are, you know, with Kevin Durant on the sideline. I think, you know, Kevin Durant just put them over the top. Somebody you can just give the ball to and get out of his way, and he'll get you a bucket. And, you know, I just don't think there's really anything. You know, all the things that's going on, we're talking about the uncertainty of Kevin Durant's future, Klay Thompson's future, Draymond Green's future, Draymond's relationship with Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant's relationship with everybody. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter because when they get on the court, I just don't think any of that is going to be able to disrupt what's going on. So, you know, I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but really, I mean, this team is just too talented. The things that they're going through, the little issues that we see with them, it can disrupt the chemistry on another team.
All right, let's talk about
not this team. They're just too deep.
Let's talk about Russell Westbrook, who former MVP you know, as well known a personality as there is in the NBA. He had the weird deal when the little kid, you know, kind of touched him when he was standing out of bounds, and then he had a freak out moment, and then he talked to the dad and talked to the kid. Then he has the ugly scene in Utah where he responds to a guy. And look, I get it. Guys yell things out at you and you get offended. But at what point does he either not pay attention, or does he just go to security and have the guy escorted? Because, like, the more it escalates, nothing good's going to come from it. I don't understand what the win. He's not going up in the stands. When you're worth over $200 million, you're not going up in the stands for a knucklehead fan. I just don't understand why he listens, why he engages with those people, because it's only going to lead to something ugly happening.
Well, I think that's where the league has to step in, and you know, they give these warnings, these red cards. Now, forget all that. Like, they need to step in and ban them from the jump, from the first incident. And then you talk about Russell Westbrook. You know, I don't know, Doug. You know, there's some guys where you just feel like you don't know what they're capable of. You know, like DeMarcus Cousins, he's that guy for me. Russell Westbrook is right there. Like, I don't know that if he doesn't get pissed enough that he won't jump in those stands.
Yeah, but that'd be the dumbest thing ever. Like, look, he's a franchise unto himself, right? Between his clothing line, his shoes, you know, he's got a family. Like, you're not going up like that. That's just not smart. And, you know, like, I think the again, anyone who's had something yelled at them, either racial or, in my case, like, anti-Semitic, like, right? Like, you want to go up there and whoop somebody's ass, especially when you're Russell Westbrook, because you can. But why not just go to security and go, you do the Jim Dolan, you enjoy watching it outside, and that'll stop it. That shuts it down completely. The Utah ended up banning the fan. I just, by engaging and cursing back at him, and I didn't think he doesn't mean he threatened bodily harm against a woman because he cursed about it, whatever. I think it only escalates until he decides to de-escalate it.
Well, I get that, and I understand. He definitely deserves some blame in his interactions with the fans. But, Doug, you played college ball. You know, I played college ball. And it's one thing for us to sit here and critique once we're all composed and we're looking. But when you're in the mood of the game, adrenaline is rushing, calls might not be going your way, you're probably pissed off at the coach, pissed off at the player, pissed off at the way the game is, and then say it's the worst. Say it's a racial slur you're hearing a fan chant. Like, you know, it's kind of easy for us to sit back and say, you know, he should do the right thing and call security. You know, he the emotions are caught up, especially when a fan is that close. You know, there was another video, you know, shown where a fan was like three rows from us. And he was calling him boy. Hey, boy, dude. You know, so I understand what you're saying, and definitely he should refrain from doing anything that's going to cause any physical harm on a fan, but they're human. They're human, and they're in a hostile, competitive environment to which, you know, tempers explode at certain points.
Chris Haynes joining us from Yahoo Sports. You have an exclusive where you sat down with Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving apologized for the way he's handled things with the media. What led to him apologizing?
You know, I just happened, you know, I covered Kyrie in Cleveland, and I know how, you know, sometimes he's open, moody. He's other times, you know, you just get the complete opposite. You know, I just happened to catch him on a good day, and I just wanted to ask him about this past month, and, you know, how he felt. And, you know, he basically was just real open. You know, gave me some time before he spoke with the mask room and said, you know, I'm not proud of the way I handled things this past month. And And I, you know, as a professional, I owe it better to my teammates, you know, for them seeing that. And, you know, I owe it to the fans, the future ballers that's going to be in my position. You know, I owe it that they need to see what a professional is supposed to look like, how he's supposed to handle himself. And he said, you know, he can't react like that. And he started reflecting on, you know, his time with LeBron James and how, you know, it was a bunch of pressure to live up to his shoes when LeBron left and chose to go pursue championships. And he said he's a 19-year-old who had his own goals, and, you know, it just made it hard. And I just think coming into that element, coming under those circumstances from the get-go, I think that's kind of pushed Kyrie to being the player and being the kind of guy who's moody sometimes. I think that all stems from, you know, how he came into the league with this forced pressure that he didn't ask for. You know, he said he felt like he was doing pretty well as a rookie. He was hitting all the benchmarks he was as a young star, but yet he was still being compared to what LeBron James did. And he just told, you know, said how that took a toll on him. And I just tried to paint the picture to show people how, you know, that upbringing in the NBA is kind of why Kyrie is the player he is now. But, he took all this and said he needs to get better, and he promised to do better. And so I have to give him credit.
You know, why did he say that he's coming back, he'll sign, re-sign, if that's not the way he feels? Like, why was he just...
I know. It's caught up in emotions, I guess. Caught up in emotions. And, you know, he hasn't said that he's not going to resign back there, but he let it be known that he's a grown man and he's going to do what's best for him and his family, which kind of caught people, you know, back. You know, that's the thing about it's hard to gauge him today. Terry Rozier had a quote last week. He said, when Kyrie is in a good mood, we're playing well, everything is nice. When he's not, we're struggling. And I think that's very telling. I've never really heard a player say, based off of somebody's mood, that's how the team is going to flow as a unit. And so if that's the way it is, I don't think it should be that way. But if that's the way it is, then Kyrie has to make sure he's going to up and up from day to day.
No question about it. Like, maybe, I don't think, maybe he's you do yoga. I don't know. Just find a way to find a way to be center, because he's so good. He's so crazy talented. Who does the league think is the best team in the East?
In the East, that's a good, you know, I think a lot of people are saying Milwaukee. For the most part, they're saying Milwaukee and Toronto. And, you know, I'm pretty much right there. But look, man, Kyrie said it a couple weeks ago. He was like, he's tired of the regular season. He's tired of asking questions about what's wrong with them, why they're not finding the continuity. He said, I want to get to the postseason. That's what I'm going to make. That's what I came here for. And, man, I covered that kid, man, on a day-to-day basis, man, for years. I've seen what the kid can do when he's in tune. I can't dismiss him because I still think he's one of the best, if not the best, closers in the game. If you got him, man, I think that sets you apart. So while I would say, you know, Toronto and Milwaukee is, you know, what most people are saying, man, I'm not dismissing Boston by any stretch.
I completely agree. I mean, like, look, they have Brad, they have Kyrie. I love Al Horford and what kind of the understated things that he brings to the table. Jason Tatum and those guys have shown they can perform for the most part under the pressure of the postseason, whereas I haven't seen that from Milwaukee. They haven't even won a series yet. You know, Philly, the Celtics seem to have figured out Philly, even if nobody else can. And while Toronto, I think Toronto's the biggest threat because they have Kawhi. I'm just not sure about everything else they have around him, you know, because Kyle Lowry at times has struggled in the playoffs, and that's one of the reasons they look to move off Kyle Lowry. But it's going to be fascinating. Listen, if you haven't read the article, do so. Chris Haynes sitting down with Kyrie Irving. It's an exclusive, of course. Download his podcast as well. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it as always, man.
All right, man. Enjoy. Yours in Hoops. It's Chris Haynes joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.